Welcome to One Place, Many Voices. I am your host, Nanette Weiser. I am the series host. And with me today in studio is our correspondent, Deb Carson, one of our co-hosts on the series. One Place, Many Voices, Pinellas County, is powered by Heritage Village Museum with support from a Florida Humanities grant. Our guests today are going to talk about Eckerd College. I'm going to let Deb Carson introduce a wonderful woman with an amazing history and her wonderful father. Deb, take it away.
As an author, I am particularly thrilled today to be speaking with fellow author and fellow Eckerd College alumna, Dr. Stephanie Cadell Taris. And by way of transparency, then, I must tell you how I first learned of Stephanie. And I have to say, it's a little embarrassing. It was 3 years ago, and I had recently published my own first book, Becoming Flow, a mostly true story. I was searching for what might be a next book project. Because of my love for my undergrad alma mater, Eckerd College, and equally my adoration and respect for Eckerd's sixth president, James Annarelli, I wanted to pitch to him an idea for my next project. I could not have been more excited to tell Dr. Annarelli about it. My idea was to write a history of my beloved Eckerd College. Well, in my excitement, I failed to do my research. Really embarrassing. It was only after I sat with Jim and I pitched my surefire idea to the gracious Dr. Annarelli that he ever so gingerly informed me that for the first history of Eckerd College, that had been written and published in 2008. And that a second history had been released only a few years before. How embarrassing indeed. But the giving Dr. Annarelli never let me feel anything other than proud for having published my own first book, which I brought with me as a gift for both accepting a meeting with me and to let Jim know that I was at Eckerd when the idea for my first book planted those seeds. But I digress. We spoke at length about the two books on Eckerd's history, and I am so proud and so pleased to speaking with the author of those two books and the brainchild of both of those books today, the brilliant, awarded, and accomplished writer, and I'll mention again, fellow Eckerd alum, Dr. Stephanie Cadell Taris. Please join me in welcoming Stephanie and thanking her for agreeing to take part in our proud Pinellas County Oral History Project. Hi, Stephanie. How are you?
I'm great, and I'm really pleased to be a part of this and to get to talk about my beloved and your beloved Eckerd College. I do want to clarify that my last name is Cadell Taris.
Thank you.
That's okay. It doesn't look like it from the spelling, but Cadell is the last name of my grandfather, who was the founding president of the college. So I want to be sure we get his name pronounced the way it goes. And also just to let you all know that while I'm excited to talk about St. Petersburg of Pinellas County and Eckerd College, I live in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and that's where I'm talking to everyone from today.
Well, wonderful. I thought you were out of state, and but I believe you had mentioned that you were born in Pinellas County. Can you tell us a little bit how that came about?
Yes. So I am one of four children who were born to Richard Cadell and Karen Reynolds Cadell, both of whom were founding freshmen at Eckerd College in 1960, and they met each other in the choir on their first days on the campus, when it was actually in a temporary location in St. Pete before the current college campus was built. And they fell in love in the choir, and they got married, and they had his family in St. Pete. And then my father ended up becoming a college professor of music at a small private Presbyterian liberal arts college, kind of like Eckerd, but in West Virginia. And so I grew up in a totally different state, but then I came back to St. Petersburg to be a student at Eckerd College in the 1980s. And then my parents stayed and moved at that same time back to St. Pete, and they lived there the rest of their lives. My father recently passed away, but my mother is still there living in St. Pete, so I visit often.
Oh, excellent. Okay, I didn't know that. Now, how old were you when you moved from St. Pete to West Virginia?
I was only 5 years old.
So you spent most of your growing up years in West Virginia until you came?
That's right.
Okay. Well, I guess for the good of the order, we should also say most people are going to know Eckerd College by that name. But when it was first founded, it was founded as Florida Presbyterian College. And you had mentioned your grandfather was the first founding president of Florida Presbyterian College, correct?
That's right, yep.
And how did he come to be that person and come to Florida Presbyterian? And what year would that have been?
I'd love to tell this story, and I'm so glad that I get a chance to today. And this is, you know, really a lot of the story that's featured in the book On Solid Rock. He was a minister in the Presbyterian Church. And he actually was born and raised in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. And he went to seminary in Pittsburgh. But he, during World War II, after he was married and had a few kids, including my dad, who was a little boy, they moved to Tampa because he was a chaplain for the Army Air Force. And that's what brought the Cadel side of the family to Florida, was the war. And he continued to preach while he was serving as a chaplain, first in Tampa until after the war. And then he moved to a church in Orlando. And he was a Presbyterian minister, so he was at the First Presbyterian Church of Orlando. And this was in the 1950s. And he grew that church through really his fine skill as an orator and a storyteller, and also as a fundraiser and the ability to grow his congregation and grow the church buildings and facilities that were needed. He sort of proved all of these kind of leadership skills that were also the kind of skills that a college president would use. And when the Presbyterian Church in the state of Florida decided that the state was, you know, growing so fast in the 1950s that they wanted to sort of seed a new college in the state of Florida, they were looking for a first president to really help move that idea forward. And because Dr. Cadel had done so much to prove himself in the church at large, they chose him to be the first president at the very first board meeting in 1958. And as I said before, the first founding class came in 1960. So he really only had 2 years between when the idea was really germinating and the first freshman showed up ready to take classes, to do everything that you'd have to do to get the college started, you know, coming up with a mission and hiring faculty and figuring out where it was going to be. At the time, they didn't even know it was going to be in St. Petersburg. In fact, there were, I think, more than 20 cities around the state that lobbied for the Presbyterian Church to put the college in their town because they wanted, you know, to have a college help bring people to their town and build their economy and build their reputation. And St. Petersburg was in the running with the last few, you know, strongest candidates, which also included Orlando and Ocala and Sarasota. But St. Petersburg won the day with a commitment that they made both through their showing of the people who cared. They had more than 100 people come together at a meeting that were local ministers, local educators, government people, business leaders, and they all, you know, made a presentation to my grandfather and these other board members. And then they also offered the land that the current campus is on, waterfront property in South St. Petersburg, to build a campus. And then they also offered some interim property, not to be owned, but for the college to use for its first offices and first classes. and that is the current USF St. Pete campus in downtown St. Petersburg.
Oh, that's interesting.
So that's actually where my parents first met.
Oh, that's interesting.
On that temporary campus.
So it was first established where USF St. Pete now sits on the water.
That's right.
And at what point did the college campus move to its current location, which is in South St. Pete, right just really north of the Sunshine Skyway, really just where St. Pete begins?
They started building it almost immediately after classes began, and they already had some students living in the dorms by, I think, 1962 or 63, and most everything had been moved onto the permanent campus by about 1964, even as they continued to build more buildings to accommodate the growth of the college population and all of the different programs that they wanted.
Gotcha. Now, your dad was in the founding class, the first freshman class, as was your mom. Now, I'm going to ask you, how was your dad always expecting to attend Florida Presbyterian at the time, or was he considering other schools? And how did your mom come to choose Florida Presbyterian?
So my father actually was a little bit older than most everybody else in the freshman class because he graduated from Boone High School, I think in 1957. That's in Orlando, where my grandfather was, you know, the minister at the time. But then he joined the Marines. So he was gone from home for a few years serving in the Marines. And it was when he was about to get out that all of these things had, you know, occurred while he was serving that made it possible for him to start with that class in 1960. And the timing was just right. And of course, by then his parents had left Orlando and moved to St. Petersburg. And I think it just sort of seemed like the obvious thing for him to do. My mother's story is lovely because she also came to Pinellas County from the north with her family when she was a girl. Her father had been stationed during World War II in Florida temporarily when he served in the Navy, not in St. Pete, I think in Jacksonville, but he loved Florida and he was from Rhode Island, and that's where my mom was born and where their family was settled after the war. But he always had this dream, and his name is John Reynolds. He always had this dream of getting back to the Sunshine State. He wanted to go back where it was warm. And it was the last winter that he put up with in Rhode Island that was apparently a pretty bad one that made him say, come on, we're just getting out of here. And so he loaded my mom, who was 14, and her younger siblings, two siblings, and my grandmother into a car, and they drove down and arrived in Halloween of 1950. Let me see. I think I wrote it down here so I wouldn't forget. 56. So my mom went to high school at St. Pete High, and everybody in the Reynolds family were musicians. My grandfather ended up becoming the choir director at Christ United Methodist Church in downtown St. Pete. And my grandmother was the youth choir director at that church. And they both had paid jobs, but obviously not great paid jobs, being choir directors in a church.
Right.
So my grandfather was also a postman, and he delivered mail on St. Pete Beach on a bicycle.
Wow.
In the 1950s. And so my mother went to high school at St. Pete High, and she was into music, and she was in the choir, and she also performed in like local musicals they did in Oklahoma at the school and stuff like that. And so when she wanted to go to college, but she kind of thought maybe she would just go to junior college until she figured out what next. And it was a friend of hers who said, have you heard that they're starting this new college in downtown St. Pete with the Presbyterian Church? Now, she was Methodist, but there wasn't a huge difference between those two denominations, and it didn't concern her in any way, except I think she liked that it was a church-affiliated school. And so she went on down to the campus and found out that she could afford it with, you know, some help and also with her parents' support. And and she lived at home the whole time. There were some dorm rooms available on that early temporary campus, but my I think both of my parents lived at home when they were students there.
And was your grandfather, by the time that both of your parents graduated, was your grandfather still the president of Eckerd?
He was. He was the president until 1968. So he really saw the college through its first 10 years, from it being just a nascent idea to a fully formed campus with a fully staffed and, huge faculty and lots of students. And he saw the students go from, you know, being sort of bright-eyed 1950s era conservative looking church kids to, you know, 1968 hippies, walking the campus in their bare feet. And he really saw that whole transition during the time that he was the president there.
And then let's get to the time that you started at Eckerd. First, I guess I'll ask you, tell me a little bit about your life in Pinellas when you came here, and what you remember of it before you left, and then when you came back. And did you consider other colleges for undergraduate other than Eckerd, or was that pretty assured that you were going to plan to attend?
So I don't have much memories of living in Pinellas County as a young child. My father at that time was the choir director. Again, my parents were both musicians, just like my mother's parents. My father was the choir director at First Presbyterian Church in downtown St. Petersburg when I was a child. So I have a couple of just sort of vague memories of like the choir room behind the sanctuary, and that's about it. But all the time that I was going to the school as a kid in Elkins, West Virginia, I certainly was thinking about college, expecting to go to college, because my father was teaching at a college, and so we were always on the campus and doing things, and it was sort of just expected that we would go. And I vaguely knew the story of my grandfather's work there, but by then they had moved back to Pennsylvania, my Cadle grandparents, and so we were able to visit them quite a bit because it wasn't that far from Elkins to go to Pittsburgh where they were. He ended up being the president of Pittsburgh Theological Seminary at the end of his career.
Okay.
So I kind of knew about it. And what happened was my parents decided they wanted to move back to St. Petersburg when I was about to finish high school. And I hadn't applied anywhere because I had thought I was just going to go to the college where my dad taught, right? Because it was tuition was covered and it was just the obvious thing to do.
Sure.
So they were going to move right as I was about to graduate. And I was like, well, what am I going to do? And so it was my mother, who is a wonderful mother, who was like, well, let's just take you over to the campus and see if you could get in at this late hour. And, I'm sure it did help that she was an alum and that I was a Cadle. I wouldn't pretend that those weren't relevant characteristics of me as somebody applying to the school. But anyway, they were able to fit me into the freshman class of 1985. And that's when I started my whole personal career with Eckerd College, separate from my family.
That's awesome. And I'm so glad that you went to Eckerd, because you eventually, and I want to talk a lot about this. I want to talk about the two books. You are essentially the sort of bona fide Eckerd historian, and know as much about the college as anybody at this point. But let me ask you, when you started at Eckerd, were you intending upon a career as a writer? And then what led you to pursue a master's and a doctorate?
So, I have a little trouble going back and getting in the head of, the 17-year-old who had no idea what the world was. And knowing what I really thought that I wanted. But when I was a student at Eckerd, I loved writing, and I got a lot of praise for my writing skills. They even asked me to be a tutor in the writing center for my fellow students, fellow classmates. And I helped even with some official writing projects for the office that was working on accreditation for the college, where you have to do a lot of reports and things to submit to the accrediting agency. And so, I felt like I was a good writer and that I could use that skill, but I never thought that I could make a living as a writer. It just didn't seem like that was a possibility. And so I thought I would be a teacher because my father was a teacher and my sister had become a teacher by then, my older sister. So I actually majored in education. And at that time in the 80s, there was still a program at Eckerd to become a public school teacher. They don't have that program anymore. But I did all the coursework for it. And then when I got to be a junior and went to my first student teaching assignment in an elementary school in St. Pete, I realized that I was not cut out to be a teacher. I'm sort of an introvert and I wanted to be like in the back of the room, like watching what was happening, but I really didn't want to get up in the front of the class and tell kids how to do things. So I went to my mentor at Eckerd College, who was Kathy Watson.
Oh, my gosh.
Who worked her whole career at Eckerd.
We are both among the luckiest students. We are both among the luckiest students imaginable to have had Kathy Watson as our mentor. She's wonderful.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear that, Deb. It gives me goosebumps just to hear you say that.
Oh, I love that woman. I love that woman. I love her husband, Sterling. But, oh, my gosh, I have so much to say about Kathy, and I know you do, too. I know she played a big part.
She did, and I'm glad to know she did in your life as well, because she is the kind of person that Eckerd knows changes lives.
Yes, exactly.
And she changed my life that day, because I went into her office and I was in tears because I was already a junior. And I was like, I'm supposed to graduate in a year and I don't want to be a teacher. And what am I going to do? And one of the great things about Eckerd is that, you know, they want to help you pivot and find where you really belong. And so she helped me make up my own major that didn't exist. They called it a concentration.
Uh-huh.
And instead of majoring in education to be a teacher, I created this concentration called Education and Qualitative Research. So, and for your listeners, qualitative research just means research focused more on storytelling and interviews and observation, more like an anthropologist, as opposed to quantitative research, which is more statistics and surveys and that sort of thing.
Right.
So that was great because, as I said, I wanted to sit in the back of the classroom and see what was going on and take notes and talk to teachers and students and parents, but I didn't want to be the teacher. And so I ended up writing a thesis as an undergraduate where I spent time at a small school in St. Pete doing just exactly that and created my own little research project. And that's the last thing that I did to meet my requirements to graduate from Eckerd. And so that prepared me well to go on to graduate school, as you had asked about. It really didn't prepare me well for anything else, kind of, because, you know, what kind of career was I going to get as a person with a concentration in educational research? But going to grad school, you know, you're more prepared to become a researcher or possibly a professor. But then again, remember, I didn't really like teaching. So I did go on to school all the way through pretty much nonstop, basically because my mother always said, just get as much education as you can and just keep going as long as you can before you know what it feels like to have money, which I always thought was a good advice from a mother who wanted us to be well-educated.
Indeed.
And so I continued to study in schools of education, and I continued to focus on interviewing and writing. And so that really set me up for, you know, writing these books about Eckerd later on, even though at the time I had no idea that that's where I was headed. And in fact, I would say that my career didn't exist when I was a college student, which is so often the case, and why I think a liberal arts education is such a wonderful path, because we don't know what the careers of the future are going to be.
Right.
And I think it makes a lot more sense to have the flexibility to, you know, find your path as the paths open up for you.
And you, I mean, we're going to talk about the books next, but I want to also say that, I mean, I totally agree with you. I have a similar story as an Eckerd student. You know, things didn't exist as I needed them to exist, and they eventually did. I was able to do that at Eckerd and then move on to USF St. Pete in Florida Studies and do the very same thing. So we share a lot, Stephanie. But let's talk about...
I'd like to hear more of your story when we can do that.
You can interview me next time for your business.
Excellent.
I want to talk about how did you come to write the first book on Solid Rock, and then eventually you wrote a second book with, I know a lot of people who contributed with your writing on that as well, who were still at Eckerd and may still be at Eckerd. In fact, I know that some of them still are Eckerd at this time. So please tell us the story of how you came to be the author of those two books.
Sure. First, I would say, when you introduced me, I consider myself the unofficial institutional historian at Eckerd College, because no one ever called me that, the institutional historian. And
we're changing that today. We're changing that today.
It's sort of an Eckerd joke, right, to not really be a real something, just sort of unofficial. And I love having that role because, you know, now everybody who's heard this brief version of my story knows that my history and Eckerd's history are intertwined from long before I was even born. And to be able to continue to tell that story and to be a part of that story, it just is like, who could invent a life like that? I feel so fortunate. Yep. But what happened to cause me to be the author of this book was about 2003, after the president of Eckerd at that time, who was Don Eastman, had been in the role for a little while, he saw the 50th anniversary coming down the road, right? So the college was founded in 58. So 2008 was going to be a big milestone in the college's history. And he was interested in the founding vision and the sort of stories of these kind of legendary early faculty. And Dr. Eastman was from outside of the Eckerd community when he was hired. So everything he was learning about Eckerd, he was learning for the first time as a new president and meeting some of these gentlemen. They were mostly all men, and finding out that they really were amazing characters. And I think he had this thought that we really should give them a chance to tell the story, especially when so many of them were still alive in the early 2000s, but of course were quite elderly by then. And so the idea came about to, you know, let's begin to collect some oral histories, sort of like what you and I are doing today. And Kathy Watson at that time had left her position, well, not really left it. She was still occasionally teaching a class, but mostly she was sort of a full-time special projects for the president kind of position by then at the college. Mm-hmm. And so she knew me well, and she understood well what Don Eastman had in mind. And she knew all the earliest faculty because she also is an Eckerd alum from the 1960s.
Right.
And so she came up with the idea to put us all together and brought me in on the conversation. And, you know, by then I had a PhD. And in fact, by then I had started my own business that I have to this day, Timepieces Personal Biographies, which is all about writing people's life stories and company and institutional histories. So I was already kind of doing this very thing when they had the idea for this book. And so I started out by getting to contact all those original faculty members, some of whom had been my faculty members in the 80s because they'd never left. They retired from the college. And it was such an amazing experience because they really were towering intellects, but also just witty, creative people, and also real risk takers. I mean, I didn't know a lot of the story when I started the book, and, you know, to discover that many of these professors already had tenure at other colleges around the country when they were recruited to come to this college that really didn't exist. It was barely on a piece of paper at the time that they accepted the jobs, and they left their tenured positions to take a chance on whether this would even fly. And then they came because they were excited about this vision for a college like no other, which is what the original board members described it as. Mm. thinking that it was going to be highly challenging, high standards, excellent students, you know, really doubling down on the liberal arts vision where everybody would take the same classes across the curriculum and curricular divisions would be done away with so that everybody would be a scientist and a humanities major and, you know, all the things at once. I mean, not exactly that, but basically that was their theory and their vision. And then they got together as a bunch of men who didn't know each other before they came to the college and came up with the original curriculum and original requirements for this invention that they were coming together to make. And then they did it. They succeeded. And here I was, you know, writing the 50th anniversary book. So that was really, you know, where it all came from and how inspiring it was for me.
And then how many years later was it that you were returning to do the swimming lessons, the next history?
So swimming lessons came about kind of haphazardly because I just kept kind of gathering stories over the years. So the On Solid Rock came out in 2008, and Swimming Lessons really came out for the 60th anniversary. So it came out, I think, in 2017 or 2019, one or the other. Anyway, right around the time of the 60th anniversary. But it was really an attempt to say, okay, there are more stories to tell. We're long past the founding vision. We've gone on for all these decades since the beginning. And yet I didn't really feel engaged to tell a chronological tale at that time. What I wanted to do was really honor just great stories. There were so many great characters over the years and so many fun or interesting or inspiring or wild tales from various members of the community, students, alums, board members, faculty members, administrators. And my decision was just to collect some of these stories into a single book. And I could have written it the same way as I had done On Solid Rock, which was essentially in the third person, but, you know, letting the reader know who I was and that I was sort of the narrator for it. But I, at that time, I was really intrigued by the idea of story slams, you know, kind of like poetry slams where people get up on the stage and tell a story. And I'd been listening to the Moth Radio Hour where they have people tell stories on the stage. And I thought, you know, if I could take myself out of the storytelling process a little bit and just get the people whose stories these are to tell the stories themselves in their first person voice, wouldn't that make for an interesting collection of tales?
Well, I can tell you as a reader, it absolutely did.
Oh, I'm glad.
It absolutely did. And I mean, I know some of those people as well. And so I think that was a brilliant, brilliant way of honoring the college and honoring the folks that were still there and those that had were no longer there, but I loved it. It was great. I loved both books. And it was the day that I came to Eckerd to meet with Jim Annarelli to pitch what I thought was going to be this brilliant idea of writing the history of Eckerd College. He gave me your two books, and it was at that point that I read them. But I want to ask you, you know, you wrote these two books, you have your own business that works with families and recording biographies and doing all of that. I want to go back to something that you had mentioned a little bit before. And we've got about 10 minutes left, so I'll speak quickly. But there is another book about that features Eckerd prominently that came out some time ago called Colleges That Change Lives, 40 Schools That Will Change the Way You Think About Colleges. And Eckerd is featured, as I said, featured prominently. And I think everyone who I ever went to Eckerd with or I have met since that have that went to Eckerd before me, went to Eckerd after me, they really do believe that Eckerd changes lives. Do you think that you changed the life of Eckerd College or did it change you with both of these two books that you've written and the career that you have established so well for yourself?
Oh, goodness. I definitely think Eckerd changed my life, and I'm sure that came through in some of the story that I told, and, you know, giving me the confidence really to create my own sort of handmade life. I've been self-employed now for almost 30 years, and it's been wonderful. And I don't think I would have thought that I could get away with that if I hadn't been an Eckerd alum and known the creative possibilities that are presented to students at the college. As far as whether the books themselves have changed Eckerd, I definitely think that having the story in one place, you know, told by people that otherwise would have died. I mean, everybody who was involved in the founding is now dead. So if I hadn't done it when I did, like, we wouldn't have had all those details and all those great tales that they told me. So in that sense, I think it was essential that somebody do the book, and it could have been you, Deb. So, you know, and now there it is in perpetuity, you know, as something that can show all future members of the Eckerd community and leaders of Eckerd College, you know, where it comes from and what are the sort of fundamental values and beliefs and vision that we never want to forget, right? That we always want to be guiding our decisions, no matter how the world changes and no matter how education changes and no matter what the next generation of students thinks they need, there are always these fundamental aspects of a quality liberal arts education that are articulated so well by the people who founded the college and that I was lucky enough to be able to document. So that's one way that I would say that the books have really been helpful to the college. I also used my interest as the unofficial historian to give presentations in the community over the years and also to every incoming class for quite a few years. I had a nice slideshow that I would show them all these old pictures and talk about the legacy that they were really inheriting by arriving here on this campus and what it was going to do to change their lives. Now, of course, they were all 17, 18 years old at the time and probably only half paying attention. But I think that, you know, it probably planted a seed for them to realize by the end of their 4 years that they really, you know, did live that experience. And it's a magical experience.
It really was. And the, you know, one of the interesting things to me, I would have to believe you too, is the vision that was established long ago with your grandfather and with all of the people who contributed, the faculty members, and the faculty members who, as you mentioned, were already tenured professors at other places and came to this new place almost as an experiment, but how it was shaped. I came across, and I think it's actually part of your book, Swimming Lessons, that Don Eastman, when he was president, he's quoted as noting Eckerd's unique ethos, a fundamentally idiosyncratic culture and spirit, the distinctiveness of our college, so different from all of the others I know. And I think we all know, as graduates of Eckerd and those who continue to support and love Eckerd and know of its importance as a liberal college, that legacy has continued and it's grown, and it has remained consistent in its vision as it moves forward. And with each of the only six presidents in its history, and it'll be interesting to see where things go. And it will be interesting to see what your trajectory will continue to be with Eckerd College and in your own life. And so I want to ask you, importantly, in your opinion, what does or should Eckerd continue to mean to our community as St. Pete, as you've seen, I'm sure, as an observer and someone who's lived here and someone who has studied here with your family, your mom's still living here? What do you think it means to our growing community, our changing community, and what should it mean in the future?
So I am so happy you asked that, because I have always thought that Eckerd College is a blessing to Pinellas County that is maybe not as well known as it should be. I do know that there are a lot of collaborations going on between the college and the community and on all sorts of fronts, from marine science research to, you know, summer camps for kids that come onto campus and just everything in between. And I couldn't possibly describe them all. So I know that there's a lot of ongoing benefit and mutual benefit between the college and the community. But I also want more high school kids to know about it and to imagine that they could be happy there, and that I wouldn't want the sticker price to scare them off, because I know that there's a lot of great scholarships and a lot of people who love Eckerd as a parent or as an alum, who have donated to scholarships to make sure that it is available to students from situations that wouldn't normally be able to afford to go to a private 4-year residential college. I think, you know, I would really love more of those young people to visit the campus and see that it's right there in their own city, and to, you know, feel the vibe of the place and just realize that there might be something magical there for them as well. Because for you and me, Deb, it really did change our lives. And I would love for it to be able to change more lives of the people right there in the community where Eckerd is lucky to be.
Well, that is, I'm with you 100%. And our time is sadly up, because we could go on for a long time. But I wanted to make sure that people know how they can contact you, how they can purchase the books, read the books, also contact you concerning your own business, which is Timepieces Personal Biographies. You have written other books. You are a poet. I read some of your poetry. It was wonderful. If we had time, I would have had you recite some of it as well. Please tell us how we can contact you and how we can read your work.
Well, the easiest way to contact me is to go to my website, which is Timepieces Bios. That's TimePiecesBios, like biographies, timepiecesbios.com. And there's a contact page on there. And that's probably the simplest way to point people in my direction. And thank you for asking. Now, the Eckerd books are a little difficult. On Solid Rock is really not available for anyone to read at this time. They had a limited run of publishing when it first came out. And so far at this point, there just aren't that many copies available. Swimming Lessons, I think, may be for sale in the bookstore on the Eckerd College campus. But both of the books were published by the college itself, so they're sort of self-published books. And more for the community to read. So not that anyone would not want people to read them. I think there just wasn't really an effort made to make them publicly available in an easy way. So one of these days we're going to have to get around to doing a reprint or getting it up online or something.
Yes.
Because, you know, I do want more people to share it. But one of the fun things about being the kind of writer I am is that I can really just write for the audiences of the people that are in the books. And, you know, a lot of authors are really need to find a wide audience, but I've been lucky to find the kinds of clients that, you know, appreciate having the book for their own purposes. And that's kind of fun. So thank you.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today and joining this important project for Pinellas County. We love highlighting Eckerd College and we love talking about Eckerd College. I'm so glad to meet you. And I hope we can continue our dialogue and our conversation and our newly established friendship.
I agree. I look forward to that, Deb. Thanks so much for inviting me.
Thank you, Stephanie.
So, Stephanie and Deb, I want to thank you so much. Such an honor to have Eckerd College as part of this incredible project, One Place, Many Voices, inspired by the Smithsonian's Many Voices, One Nation exhibit that is coming to Heritage Village, who celebrates 50 years this summer. And, you know, Stephanie, before you go, I want to ask you some of the questions we've asked all of our guests, and to thank you once again, because in looking through Swimming Lessons, I see our friend Arthur Skinner, who has been at Radio St. Pete, recording, learning to etch, learning to teach. I love the pieces on hurricanes, rescue missions. I thought that the whole Swimming Lessons, 60 years from stories from 60 years at Eckerd College, we would love to have you back on Radio St. Pete just to read some of these stories to us.
Oh my gosh. That would be a pleasure. Please let me know if that's something that I can do with you.
We want you to do this. This is your official invite. Tim Valley, who is our producer and audio engineer, is nodding vigorously. And it's just wonderful. Deb, of course, has introduced me to James Zanarelli, the latest in presidents, who will be much missed. Deb Carson is a credit to the organization. So back to the America 250 questions. So how has Eckerd College not just shaped your life so that you've been inspired to continue telling their stories and other stories, but how does Eckerd College and its growth, development, and what it means today reflect the American story?
Wow. I mean, I don't know how many minutes you have, but
I have all the time in the world for you.
I mean, one of the very important stories in On Solid Rock is the story of the integration of higher education in the South. And what's amazing about the Eckerd story is that it's like a microcosm of that macrocosm story that was going on in the 1950s and 1960s. And the college's story is not uniformly positive. The very first board members, who were all white men from a conservative church, they refused to admit the first qualified and accepted by admissions black applicant to the college and in 1962. And in response to that ill-guided decision, the faculty all resigned. They all submitted their resignation just barely, you know, after they'd started teaching in this wonderful experiment that they'd created in solidarity with this applicant and in clear protest of the fact that these board members were thinking that this was not going to be an integrated college. And my grandfather, as the president, joined in with both sides to say, look, we need to figure this out. This is not going to be the end of this vision, and this is not the right thing to do. And so over the course of that summer, he got the board members and the faculty together and got the board to pass a resolution that there would be no discrimination based on race or other characteristics that were in that list, to just make it clear that Eckerd College, Florida Presbyterian College, was not going to be a school that was desegregated or that was segregated. And then what happened was, when I wrote that book 50 years later, no one really knew the story of the gentleman who had applied and been refused. By the time the board got their act together and did the right thing, he had joined the military and was no longer going to college. And so the book helped the current board in 2008 to be sort of inspired to go and find him and learn more about his story and what happened to him. His name is Howard Kennedy, and he went on to have a very successful career. And he was living in New York City at the time. And it turned out he'd had a wonderful life that was clearly the kind of life that we would describe as an Eckerd grad's kind of life, creative and entrepreneurial and community-minded and successful. And he was, of course, shocked when President Eastman called him and said, you know, we care about you and we feel terrible about what happened and we want to, you know you better and do whatever we can to sort of make up for this injustice. And so Howard Kennedy came down and was given an honorary degree at commencement, and he actually served on the Eckerd College board for some time and was very much a part of the community. And it was a really inspiring story for all of us.
And so I just want to interject and say that is the very first story that you tell in the first chapter of Swimming Lessons.
That's right. So by the time I had the second book coming out, we had done all of this, right? The college had learned this story and figured all this out. And I had met Howard, and he and I talked quite a bit about whether and how he would want his story to be published. And he graciously offered to share it with me and to share it with the world. And so if you ask me, how is Eckerd related to the 250th anniversary of our country? Well, there is just one small but very important story that's just related to one college and one family and you know, one effort to really say we are all one, and We need to respect and support and work together to make this world a better place. And so I'm proud to have had the opportunity to document that example.
That is the best answer I've gotten in all of the interviews. And I'll tell you that Ruy Farias, of course, at the St. Petersburg Museum of History reminds us, and with the Civil Rights exhibit, that it wasn't just the Civil Rights movement, that St. Petersburg was immensely divided, that there were beaches that people couldn't go to. There was an immensely divided community long after things had been sort of squared away. And of course, as we approach Juneteenth, this is even a bigger issue. So thank you, Stephanie. So finally, I want to ask you, as we approach America's 250th anniversary, what do you hope future generations will understand about the importance of Eckerd College, colleges like Eckerd College? In fact, we had a number of students working with the radio station, Maddie Merrick, who truly demonstrate the missions of serving the community, belonging to clubs that serve the community. But in your idea, what does the college represent as a shining beacon for future generations to appreciate and continue?
Well, you know, in the years since the founding of the college, it has evolved along with how society has evolved. And in the beginning, the first faculty were really just focused on a classic liberal arts education and weren't really even paying attention to the fact that they were going to be teaching right there on a waterfront campus. And now, you know, 60 plus years later, the college is known nationally and possibly even globally as a place to study marine science and environmental science and even now animal studies. And so I think over time, Eckerd has become a beacon for bringing more attention to what it means to live on this incredible planet that we are all lucky to be residents on, and to recognize our responsibility and our humility as earthlings. And I think that more and more the college is demonstrating its position as a leader in treasuring the Tampa Bay and Boca Ciega Bay, and in teaching everyone who lives here how much value there is in the natural world that is around us, and that, gosh, anybody who lives in St. Petersburg is so lucky to have be it their home.
Well, if Nicole Vogler, who is the executive editor of the school paper heading to London, and Maddie Merrick, who is the head of WECX at Eckerd College, are listening, I know both of you, one in animal studies, the other one majoring in environmental studies, and the newest program that Eckerd has added, Stephanie, environmental filmmaking, the first one in the country. Amazing.
That's awesome. How wonderful. One of the things that I keep feeling as I spend time over the years with Eckerd is I wish I could go back and do it all over again, right? I'm sure Jess feels the same.
Me too.
Yes, because I want to study all these things.
Absolutely. Stephanie and Deb, we thank you so much for coming on the One Person, Many Voices podcast series, inspired by the Smithsonian's Many Voices, One Nation exhibit coming to Heritage Village this summer. I hope that all of you are listening will help us celebrate America 250. You can go to RadioSt.Pete.com, click on podcasts, and listen to all the podcasts that we're doing. You also will be able to go onto the Their Story archive to hear them all with video and photos. We're very excited to celebrate America 250, Heritage Village's 50th anniversary, and other milestones at the All-American Independence Bash July 11th, where we will read the Declaration of Independence with people like Deb Carson, actors, comedians, Tim Valley, and myself, and bring America to life. So, folks, I want to thank you all for being here, Deb and Stephanie, for an amazing interview, and Eckerd College, shout out to all of you. So until next time, let freedom ring.